Biological Farming Roundtable podcast helps farmers explore innovative, low-input, regenerative and profitable farming systems. The Biological Farming Roundtable is sponsored by Nutrisoil, an award-winning biological liquid fertiliser made from a big worm farm. Nutrisoil's purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food. My name is Nicola Maddock. I work at Nutrisoil. I envisage a future where farmers are rewarded for producing nutrient-rich foods and consumers have this easily available to them. Today I'm interviewing Tom Briggs. Tom, along with his dad, operates a sheep and cropping property near Rutherglen, Victoria. The father and son team have strong regenerative farming values and, while being moderate synthetic input users, are now 2 years into a long-term plan to totally remove synthetic fertilisers from their system. We recently ran a biological farming roundtable at the Briggs property, with over 30 participants being shown the results from a number of multi-species cover crops in two variable rainfall seasons with encouraging results. Thanks for talking with me today, Tom.
Hi, Nicola. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
Can you tell us a bit about your farming system?
We run a mixed operation across a combined 900 hectares. Approximately 600 of those hectares is cropping country, and the balance of that's grazed with 1,200 ewes. The ewes were transitioning to a self-replacing ewe flock. We did have cattle, but last year we sold the last of the cattle. We felt that they were compromising our structure too much with too much pugging over the winter period. We may bring cattle back into the system if primarily the focus of the warm season species cover crops will be going to maintaining our ewes. If that biomass gets away in a given year, cattle may come in as an option of trade lambs, but holding them over winter and breeding, we made the decision that we're spreading ourselves too thin, that they're compromising our structure and our environment, so they have transitioned out. The farm had been pretty conventional in the way that it was operated. Dad had been following current agronomic practice, or up-to-date practice, had been direct drilling for 8 years, but Dad didn't ever go the whole hog on synthetics. He was always a bit conservative with the amount of synthetics that he was using. And then when I came home, that's when it all changed. I was hell-bent on, at a minimum, retaining our stubbles. Whilst doing the research into that, knew that we were going to have to go to the discs, but weren't hearing answers to some of our problems, mainly around infiltration. Whilst doing the research, stumbled across the principles of regenerative agriculture and soil health, and that's snowballed to where we are today.
So what's your reason to want to reduce your synthetic fertiliser use on the property?
Firstly, I suppose the more, if you look in the right areas, the more I read about synthetic fertilisers and their impact on soil health, the more I'm looking to get them out of the system. But also the increasing rates that we're using to sustain or marginally improve our levels of production isn't sustainable. It's only decreasing our profit margins. But then whilst you start understanding the principles of regenerative agriculture and soil health, you start realising that there are natural systems to build for fertility, to get nutrients to the plants. Yeah, that's one of the reasons to... main reasons for reducing the synthetic fertiliser on the property.
And how are you planning to do this to reduce them?
Nothing too scientific, really. Just hopefully in 5 years that we're going to wean the soils off. 100 kilos a hectare was a lot for Dad to use, so we're not coming off a really high base. But last year we did take a step back. We brought back 80 kilos a hectare for both MAP and urea. This year it's going to be 70 kilos and 70-odd kilos for urea per hectare in split applications, but also still doing research into clover varieties to plant with our wheat, triticale, barley and canola, and trying to get association with some nitrogen between the two plants, get away from a monoculture. So hopefully that will also make a quicker decrease in the requirement for urea as a nitrogen source as well.
Are they annual clovers or
we at this point the research has been into annuals. Maybe maybe some sub-clovers as they've got a bit more of a prostate habit, so they may not be getting up in the canopy of the crops quite so much. But, yeah, the cheaper option is the annuals, but we're still trying to nut that out, but we'll see where we end up.
So you're going to be using multi-species crops as part of this program. Why the multi-species cover crop in between the cash crops?
For multiple reasons. One, trying to get more taproots in the system, increase porosity, build some soil structure, a bit of nitrogen fixation if we can, green root in the year, in the soil for as long as we can. But also we're trying to maintain, fill the feed gap over the summer period. We have had some slight but marked improvements in a paddock that's had 2 years of warm seasons in some soil structure, a bit of an infiltration step in it too. In that paddock last year with the canola, we did notice that the roots were heading generally due south as opposed to other paddocks, albeit that they did have slightly different histories. But there has been a marked improvement with them, which is what we're hoping for, but not necessarily related to the multi-species, but as a management change. The quickest thing that we've seen change is how quickly the beneficials have come back in since dropping pesticides or significantly reducing them. No broad spectrum stuff. They've been really quick to come back in, along with the small mark improvements that a couple of years of warm season covers have made.
So do you use both summer and winter multi-species?
The primary focus at this point has been around warm season covers. Trying to improve some of the soil fertility over the summer period when that was sort of a dull period of not much action. Last year we did have a cool season cover crop that was from leftover seed that we planted after the cropping program, and that did have quite a marked improvement on the soil structure and was home to a huge amount of worms during the year, and their middens are still all through the soil. This year, we're going to put more cool season covers in primarily for grazing. I think the focus has been on the warm season stuff, but I think with the cool seasons, with the safety net of more rainfall, we could make a really big jump on an organic matter base with more fibrous roots, more biomass, but we won't have quite the tap roots that we get from some of the warm season plants. But yeah, so it's coming into using both, but it has been a primarily more focus on the warm season stuff at this point.
So do you use a fertiliser to get either of the summer or winter multi-species covers up?
No, not with the covers. It seems a bit counterintuitive to me to be using fert with the cover crops. One of the ideas of it is that they're scavenging nutrients, making more plant available, cycling nutrients. Although I might make a short-term gain, mainly on the warm season cover crops, they might get it out of the ground, they might produce a bit more biomass. When we've got a long-term focus of improving our soil health, to make a short-term gain, it's not what I'm in for. I'm in for the long-term gain. So, yeah, we're not putting fert down with it. Depending on the season, rainfall is more critical than fert to getting stuff out of the ground, especially over the warm season, from what our experience has been.
What about a knockdown? Do you use a knockdown first?
This year's been a bit of a learning experience, but not with the cool season stuff. It is a tool. If we do have a noxious weed or some sort of problem, we may take the opportunity to control a weed ahead of a plant, but if something comes up such as annual ryegrass or the clovers ahead of when we're going to plant, I'm not too worried about it. If we can plant green, it's an absolute cakewalk with the disc, but it will add, you know, it depends where your mindset is it a weed or not, but it adds diversity to the system. Yeah, we're not hurting our profit margin by doing a spray, so it is a bit of a watch and act approach as to what may need spraying. If it doesn't, then just go straight in and plant it.
In the summer multi-species, do you think that you save money not using fallow sprays, or does the seed cost about the same?
I suppose it depends. If you're to do multiple passes in a fallow spray, then you probably would save money depending on what money you spent on the seed. If it was only one pass, the seed may outweigh it. But if you don't have to, if you're not overly stressed about the weeds, you're increasing your profit and you're doing more to promote soil health.
So what's in the summer multi-species mix?
This year we had a 9-way mix, red clover, millet, sorghum, buckwheat, sunflower, mung bean, cowpea, lablab and swede brassica.
And is this your second summer multi-species on the same soil?
One last year was the first year that we did, and we did it on a, well, depending on how big your operation is, for us a 40-hectare paddock's pretty big. So we did do it on a larger sort of scale to see what had happened across a paddock rather than a small trial area. That paddock is in its second year. To me, it appears as though between all the warm seasons we planted this year and the paddocks that have struggled, it has been the better performer of similar paddocks.
The paddock that it was into its second summer multi-species is the better performer?
Yeah, it appears it had the quicker growth recovery. The plants looked slightly healthier. When the other paddocks were slightly more moisture stressed, they were just a little more vibrant in that paddock. It still struggled like the others, but not to quite the same harshness as the other paddocks have.
When did you sow the summer multi-species?
In 2016, we planted in mid-November. This year we started from planting into pastures from the end of October and we finished around mid-January, just depending on when we could chase the header, getting other jobs out of the road. Some paddocks we knew were going to leave to last, just seeing how the seed would run out at a really low rate coming out of the box. So some of them were just, wait for opportunity to chase the header, see how much seed we had left, other jobs came in. But as far as if it was a cash crop, you'd probably be more strict about when you were planting, but just for grazing and building soil health, it was just when we could get to it as quickly as we could, but no real stress on it.
Most people would find the most challenging, cover crop would be the summer one with the low summer rainfall. What's been your experience with this?
Varied. 2016 was a home run, really. We couldn't do it, couldn't do anything wrong, so I was really excited when we planted 500 acres this year. But we grew 5-6 foot forage sorghum last year, and that was off 70 mil of rainfall. But the difference from last year to this year is that 70 mil of rainfall was in timely events. It was spread out across a 2-month period, whereas this year I was chasing the header, had 100 mil of the rain at harvest. We've had more rainfall over this summer period, but we haven't had timely follow-up rain. And that's been the real killer in our environment. If we had an inch event, inch or 15 mil rainfall event around the start of January, it would have been a seriously different scenario. But we'll learn from that. The biggest killer this year was that big dump of rain gave the canola a huge leg up, and it germinated and sat there and didn't do anything. Just pinch all the surface moisture that in the very light rainfalls that we got.
Yeah, so that was your volunteer canola in the summer crop.
Yeah.
So you're planning to use the covers to take out the synthetic fertiliser and a farm management strategy. How are you calculating the reduction in fertiliser each year? Do you use an agronomist or?
that one's on us. Just sort of doing what we're comfortable with, although I am comfortable with what we're doing, not taking a massive jump off the edge. With our urea 3-point linkage spreader, once you get down to 20, 25 kilos a hectare, it becomes a bit of a nuisance at a light rate. So depending on how successive years, the steps that we do take in reducing it, once we hit that mark of 20, 25 kilos, it'll either be that or nothing. But over the next 5 years, depending on if we see the need to jump at a bigger rate or keep the 10 kilos. So once we get down to around that 50, 40 kilo mark range, then it'll just be shut it off after 5 years. Unless something comes out of absolutely left field and we need to prolong that for an extra year, we're slightly flexible about it, but that's the approach that we're taking.
How do you manage grazing your sheep in the system?
It potentially is our weaker point at this stage. Although we're trying to use high stocking densities, rotational graze, it's working all right in our 10 to 20 hectare paddocks. But once some of our 40 hectare paddocks the water and shade are in one corner, and we're having to flog out those corners to get an even graze out to the far corners. So going forward, you know, electric fencing will probably be the way to go, but it's a matter of whether whether we use transportable water or sacrifice a laneway right at the end of the paddock to get the stock down to the water. But that is something that we are needing to look at to improve some of the grazing efficiency on the larger paddocks.
Do you think you'll use any biological inputs in the future once synthetics are removed or even on the way?
Yeah, so this year we're planning on planting nearly all of our crops with bare seed. We will have some hybrid canola that will come treated, and we've got 40 hectares of canola that we think potentially could be at risk. So we are covering ourselves and going to treat that paddock. But for the rest of it, yeah, we're going to plant bare seed. And this year, a plug for you guys, we're going to use some NutriSoil and inoculate the seed with that. Dad has used it in the past and inoculated it and has been quite happy with the results. Yeah, so we'll see what happens there.
You talked about a high-risk paddock with one of your canolas. What's indicating that there's a risk there?
It's more of just how comfortable you feel doing things. I'm gung-ho. I'll be willing to go, but I was just conscious that, you know, it is part of an operation. So I consulted Dad as to what we thought we should be, if we should just be covering ourselves a little bit. That has had canola in it more recently than some of the other paddocks that are going to be bare this year. Really high stubble load in there. So we just thought we'll just trial and see what happens. We'll find out what happens with our other paddocks. We may need to reconsider them, although if you don't start reducing seed treatments at some point, then when do you? So we'll just see what happens.
You've changed your sowing equipment to suit this new system. Why the change and what were you using?
So it depends on what tool you require. We had been using a tine and direct drilling, but the practice had been burning the stubbles, so that was never an issue using that implement in the previous management. But going forward in our environment with the cereal stubble loads, especially that we're growing, we had to go to a disc if we wanted to implement this system really well. But this year, or what we've seen is that in very marginal moisture conditions this year, and I knew going into the disc that this is what we're going to get, is that if there's marginal moisture there, the disc is 99% efficient at retaining that moisture for crop germination. Then also if we're planting it and establishing warm season covers, and we have seen this year in a couple of cereal stubbles, that planting into a really dense cover for a warm season cover crop with the disc is a real winner.
So 5 years' time, what are you hoping to see on this property?
Hopefully we're synthetic free. That's the main goal. We'd also like to be, although we've significantly dropped their use, I'd like to be in a position where we don't even need to consider insecticide and fungicides. At the moment, we're moving quickly away from them, but we are still aware that it is a tool that we can use if we're at severe risk of losing an entire crop, and continue to grow our profit margin. We're currently growing some really profitable crops, but it's nice to get to a point that year in, year out, we're profitable, and whilst good business management would mean that you continue to track your finances, see what your cost of production is, it'd be nice to get to a point where you just know, you don't even have to consider weigh up options, that it is going to be a profitable system.
And my final question, what's your key to keeping focused on your goal?
There's some certain outcomes that we're trying to reach that are definitely, you know, keeping the motivation there. But there's also been some anomalies on the property that have, you know, really got me focused. And as we've shown you, Nicola, that at my parents' house with the lawn, 30 metres south and north of the house, one paddock year in, year out will waterlog. Another paddock in a wet year will waterlog. Generally, it's not too bad. But right in between that is mum's lawn that's always green, hasn't been cultivated, hasn't had synthetics, pesticides, fungicides put on it. It's this dark, beautiful aggregated soil that infiltrates four times faster than anything else we got that we farm. It's showing me that since the change in mindset, it is showing that our soils aren't what they are. We've degraded them to what they are, and we've got an example of what our soils in this country can actually be like. I understand that the lawn doesn't have the pressures that an agricultural system has on it, but as far as what a green root, limited synthetic input or no synthetic input on it, what a soil can be. So I've got a real mental image of what I want our soils to look like. But I suppose the three outcomes that we're trying to reach that's really, you know, really pushing it is that I want to see an increase in our infiltration rate. I cannot stand seeing waterlogging, and it is our number one yield killer in this environment. I want to have green feed year round for the sheep and to continue to improve our profitability. And if we have a sole focus on improving our soil health, implementing principles of soil health and regenerative agriculture, then I'm 100% certain that depending on how quickly it changes, that we will get to that point.
Thanks for talking with me today, Tom. Very impressed with everything you implemented, and I really hope that you'll keep us updated as you journey through your transition.
Most certainly, and if people drive along the Murray Valley Highway and head west of Rutherglen, there's a pretty good chance you'll see something a bit obscure along along there at some point, and most likely that'll be us. So if you can't get along to a day here or something like that, if you just go for a drive, you'll see some change.
Fantastic. All right, thanks for talking, Tom.
Please follow the Biological Farming Roundtable podcast. Share it with your friends and networks. I'm Nicola Maddick and I work at Nutrisoil, a liquid biological fertiliser made from a big worm farm whose purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food.